Just as in the Old Testament and the New Testament, the original word for happy is translated blessing. The world's definition of happiness is a little bit off. It would include happiness away from God. We would usually think of a temporary excitement or temporary thrill. It's got nothing to do with God. My guess is that's the reason that it got translated into the Bible as blessing. Blessing does refer to good feelings like happiness does. That much would be true. But the word blessing relates to both good feelings, but in our minds ties us back to God right away. When we hear the word blessing, we almost think that it's definitely a Christian word and Christian thought. So happiness is a good feeling, but not a short-term thrill, and it does involve God. To review, in the Old Testament, the noun God is never connected with the verb to make happy. It's not so much God is supposed to make us happy. It's more that God is good feeling. God is happiness. And people that choose to go towards God, He shines His good feelings to us. And people that choose to stay away from God, they do not get this good feeling, biblical Asher, biblical happiness. Might get a thrill. Won't last very long. So the New Testament also carries the word happiness into it. It is a little bit confusing that both are translated blessing or blessed. Hard to know the difference without getting a Strong's Concordance out. I would guess if you do it on a computer, it's still Strong's Concordance, whether on a computer or in a book. And you would look up the word and it would tell you, it would give you different numbers, and one number would be the one Greek word, the other number would be the other Greek word. So it can be done without knowing Hebrew and Greek, and it can be done that you would find that sometimes the word translated blessing actually means happiness. Here are the two. One we use all the time, eulogio, we say eulogy. That's to bless with words. That's to say good things about another person. The other one that we're looking at today, we don't know that word. It's makarios, but it's used quite a few times, 55 times. It does refer to a good feeling. I do think that more work should be done in the greater Christian world on this particular word. And not just combine them all as blessing and let it kind of be cooked together in the recipe and stirred together. This will give us some ideas of what brings good feeling. Not so much excitement, although I think it could include excitement, but that's certainly not its emphasis or range of meaning. Do notice before we start to look them up that Matthew and Luke are heavy because they're quoting Jesus, who taught a lot about happiness or makarios. After the teachings of Jesus, the book of Revelation is next. And we'll get to one of them. But next week, we study Revelation 22:14. We'll get to it next week in the 10:50 service. And blessed are those who wash their robes, that they have a right to the tree of life and may enter the gates of the city. That means happy. That word means happy. Happy are those who wash their robes. They may have a right to the tree of life and may enter the gates to the city. So there is happiness in the New Testament. Most of any is the teachings of Jesus. Most of any is in Matthew and Luke. Second would be Revelation. Jesus taught about happiness a lot, although it's always translated blessed. And we'll recognize it right away as we turn to Matthew 5 for the Sermon on the Mount. We have Luke text also, because, of course, the Sermon on the Mount is repeated in Luke. I think we probably read it more from Matthew. But our first 8 points will go rather quickly, in the sense that we don't need to keep looking around the Bible. They're all right here in Matthew 5. When Jesus commonly says the phrase, blessed are, it actually means happy. Better feelings are, and we'll recognize them, but blessed are the A, B, C, D, eight of them, means happier or good feelings are the, and I'll go right on down through Matthew 5, beginning at verse 3. We'll just take that verse for our first point. Blessed, happier, better feeling are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of God. Well, that almost seems contradictory. Better feelings are those that have a poor in spirit. One way to understand it is to talk about people that think they're rich. People that think they have everything they need without God. Okay? I remember in the student days walking around the suburbs of Washington, D.C., and the Virginia suburbs of Washington, D.C. are full of rich people. Not so much like the center of the city, but the suburbs are just full of rich people. I knock on this door, hi, we're having Sunday school every Sunday. Do your kids want to come? And one father showed me, opened up the door, look at all these gadgets and things my kids have. You think they need anything like that? That was the actual answer. The actual answer is, we're rich, we don't need your church. Okay? So that's kind of the opposite of poor in spirit. A person poor in spirit might even have money, but they say, to have value, I need God. Without God, my life does not have value. There is a mindset that's poor in spirit saying, to have value, my life needs God, and I need some help. The opposite would be rich, and Revelation 3:17 is a very good one. I am rich and have need of nothing. And God said to that, you make me sick. Basically, you make me want to throw up. The attitude of, I am rich and in need of nothing. The opposite, being poor in spirit, need not be literally poor, could be literally poor. It's kind of pushes it along, but poor in spirit would be to have value, I need God. And of course, that starts with wanting forgiveness and wanting to be saved, but it goes beyond that to Christians who have already trusted in Jesus for salvation, but the attitude is, I'm not self-sufficient. I'm not rich in spirit without God. I need some help. So blessed are those that feel that life has value with God. Or the opposite, blessed are those who think life does not have value without God. And blessed here means better feelings and happiness. Now, let's take the next one, verse 4. Blessed are happy who those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. That one also seems contradictory. Somehow, a feeling of mourning goes along with a good feeling if God is in it. We certainly should start with mourning over sins, real true guilt. I need forgiveness. I need this to be taken away. So happy are those that feel sorry when they sin and want forgiveness, either by first trusting in Jesus as Savior or as a believer wanting to confess and getting that over with. Well, there are other kinds of mourning. We could say mourning over the way the world is, making us feel sad at what we see around us and around the world. We could go to the worst type of mourning, sorrow, especially over losing somebody. Even here, 1 Thessalonians 4:13 says, sorrow not as those who have no hope. So sorrow actually psychologically makes sense. When we lose somebody, death is separation and we miss them. On the other hand, a certain amount of good feelings can exist even with that sorrow, whereby we feel that at least God will take care of them and take care of us. So number one, happy are those who feel that life has no value without God. And happy are those who mourn, especially over sins, and want forgiveness and go to God with their other types of trials. Now, number three is verse 5. Happy are the gentle, meek in the King James, for they shall inherit the earth. Thinking of history, that is a weird sermon. Because all through history, particularly Greco-Roman world, the conqueror and the warrior and the fighter is supposed to be the happiest. You're the happiest if you go chop somebody's head off. And Jesus teaches the opposite. Don't do that unless you just have to for self-defense. The opposite value is being gentle. Shall we say unselfish? So Jesus is a little bit different than the way the world was, the world of his day. Blessed are we when we are unselfish. The opposite, being selfish, makes us miserable in the end. Now let's go ahead and look at verse 6. Blessed, happy are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they shall be satisfied. Let's call it a drive. A drive to find out what is right and a drive to do it. Jesus says we'll be happier. Going the opposite direction is someone who doesn't care what is right. They're going to do what they want to do anyway. Someone who doesn't care what is true. They only care of what will benefit them. So blessed are those who are driven to find out what is right and to do what is right. Verse 7. Blessed or happy are the merciful, for they shall have mercy. A good feeling overlaps with wanting to do what is right. And when we see a person in need, we want to help them. Happy people, defined as a good feeling, is when someone is in need, and it's a real need, it's not a con artist, you can look at them and tell it, or you know for a fact, we want to do what can be done about them. The opposite would be just walking away, kind of comparable to the Good Samaritan, oh, here's this bloody beat-up person over in the ditch, I got things to do. So. Merciful means sympathy. It means pity. Someone we know for a fact has a need that we want to do, we can do about it. And Jesus' full teaching is, we'll be happier. Than the opposite of, oh, get lost. I can see you're sick or injured, and I can see all these, but get lost. I got stuff to do. Now, verse 8, blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. What is the opposite of a pure in heart? Well, it would definitely be dirty. I think we need to include dirty tricksters, dirty thinking. How can I deceive? How can I gossip? How can I lie? How can I get ahead by this? Pure in heart goes along with previous point of hunger and thirst for righteousness. That's wanting to find out what is right. But when a person lives what is right, they'll be purer in heart. And certainly they won't be a dirty trickster who wants to cheat people all the time. So they kind of go together. Point number four, seeking what is right. Point number six, doing what is right. Now we are at verse 9. We just keep going with the Sermon on the Mount. They all mean happy in the original. Makarios. Happy are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Happy are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Wow. So blessed are the peacemakers that don't like to fight, and then blessed are people that don't fight unless they have to, and they're persecuted. I think it goes along together with the idea of when we are insulted, then we're supposed to think, well, but I'm on the right side. I'm with the right person. Jesus is the master. I'm on that side. And look how many other people have been on that side. If you go to the Old Testament, you have Elijah was insulted. You have Daniel who was persecuted. You have Jeremiah that was thrown in a mud pit. And so he's saying to them here, feel better that you've been insulted or you've been persecuted because of me. Now remember what group that puts you in. Remember what that makes you a part of. So it seems totally contradictory that being insulted would make us happy. But I think we have to add Jesus's full thought. Be happy you're a part of this group. Be happy you're on this side. Now, in point number 8, I put down James and Peter also. I think Sermon on the Mount is actually a better verse for these points. On the other hand, it is interesting that James and 1 Peter just about quote Jesus on this. And this always comes to mind when you're asking the question, how early was the Sermon on the Mount? How early was it recorded? How faithful was it recorded? And part of the answer is, well, already by the book of James, they were quoting it. Already by the book of 1 Peter, they were quoting it. So Jesus used the Sermon on the Mount, and an early epistle would be James. Definitely they're quoting the same idea of you are blessed or happy if you endure persecution. Here's James 1:12. Blessed or happy is the man who perseveres under trial. That's kind of like the Sermon on the Mount. James 5:11. We count them blessed, happy, who endure. 1 Peter 3:14. And even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. That's very close to the Sermon on the Mount. 1 Peter 3:14, even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed or you are happy. 1 Peter 4:14, and if you are reviled for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. So we use the Sermon on the Mount, but it looks like the epistles of James and 1 Peter, which were written very early, were already catching it. They might have even caught it before the Gospel of Matthew was written, because the Sermon on the Mount certainly influenced Peter and older brother James. And when they're writing their very early books, they're already quoting these points about how to be happy in the Sermon on the Mount. We call them the Beatitudes, the first part. And I think sometimes do miss that the word blessed here means happy or better feeling. It doesn't mean thrill or excited. Kind of be hard to be thrill or excited if you're mourning and in sorrow. kind of hard to be thrilled and excited if you're being insulted. Might not be every day thrilled and excited, but better feeling is Jesus' teaching. That did mean happiness in the original, but it got translated blessed, because it doesn't mean excitement necessarily. And then one way to understand these Beatitudes better is to always think of the opposite. So I'm going to go down through the first eight again, and we will look at the opposite. Number one, happy are those who are poor in spirit and admit they need God. Opposite, miserable are those who think they don't need God. Person wants to be miserable, just have the attitude of the dad there in suburban Washington, D.C. Happy are those that think they're just fine without God. You know, they're miserable. They're unhappy. They think that they're going to be okay. And Jesus is saying, if you're poor in spirit, meaning you need God's help to have value, you will be happier. Now, the next one, happy are those who mourn over sin. Let's do the opposite. Unhappy are those who never feel guilt over their sin. They don't mourn over their sin. They're going to do it again. They're going to be unhappy again, too. That's the teaching of the second one. Number three, happy are those who are unselfish. They need God. Selfish people, ungentle people, mean people, cruel people, you're not going to be happy. Number four, we're doing the, stressing the opposite. Merciful people are happier. They care. They see a need. Maybe they can't fix it, but they do sympathize and want to do something about it. Unhappy are those who don't care. Suffering, pain, needy people, nah. Don't bother with it. Well, unhappy. Number five, happier if you're pure in heart. Excuse me, number six. Happier if we are pure in heart. The tricky-minded, dirty-minded person who's thinking about conniving all the time, unhappy. Number seven, peacemakers are more happy. They'd like to fix it as much as is possible with any man, be at peace with them, Romans 12:18. Unhappy are those whose whole life is revenge, getting even, fighting. I actually do try to live this. If I think someone is leading other people astray, that'll be tougher on them. If I think they're just insulting me, I'll let it go. You lead other people astray? Okay. Any of you? Any of my granddaughters? I get really mad. Okay. Other than that, though, try to make peace. As much as possible, try to make peace. Happier. And may I say, people that are unhappy are those that decade after decade, as they get older and older and older and older and older, they don't want peace. They want to fight all the time. They want to get even. They want to get revenge. They're mad all the time. Good luck. They're not happy. I mean, you know, people like that. You watch them on television all the time. That's the way they are. Are they happy? No. Happy are the peacemakers. And finally, happy are those that are persecuted for righteousness' sake, but we're trying to stress the opposite. What would be the opposite of being insulted for being a Christian? The opposite would be a compromiser. That's the opposite. Want to be unhappy? Be a compromiser. That'll make us unhappy. Yeah. Try to get the world to approve you. And by the way, they will approve for a little while, but not lasting. No, they won't. Watch how they hate each other. They might like each other for this year, but as it goes on, they all hate each other. It's amazing to watch it. You have to watch it over a few decades. Watch how they all hate each other. It's a waste of time to worry about their approval. You know, blessed are those who are insulted for being Christians. The opposite is unhappy are those who are compromisers. The world will push each other up for a while, but in the end, they'll turn on each other. You cannot make them happy. You cannot do it. A real unhappy life is trying to make the world happy. In order to stay in Matthew and not turn all over the Bible, the next one's Matthew 11, if you can turn a few pages. And we will say, Jesus says, blessed or happy are those who are not ashamed of me. And the full story is in Matthew 11, 2 through 6. Matthew 11, 2. Now when John, while in prison, heard of the works of Christ, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, are you the expected one, or shall we look for someone else? Jesus answered and said to them, go and report to John what you see. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. Now here's our happiness. And happy is the one who does not take offense in me. So, happy is the one who is not scandalized by me. That's what the word offense meant in the original. It's actually scandalizo. Happy is the person who is not scandalized by me. That kind of goes together with point 8, but enough difference, I thought I would add it here in point 9. Blessed are you when you're persecuted, insulted, and you think, well, I'm a part of a great group. I have a great leader. And then John the Baptist, he had a little bit of doubts while he's in prison before they cut his head off, and he says, you'll be happier if you're not scandalized by me. I'm not ashamed of the gospel of Christ. Paul said in Romans 1:16, I didn't use it because it's didn't have the word happiness in it, but here, you'll be happy if you are not ashamed. Section number 10, these are related, so I stuck them all together. Let's go ahead and look at Matthew 16. We've already done this in the Old Testament, but you'll be happier if you are forgiven and you know it. And this is in Matthew 16. Jesus is talking to Peter. And he has the word happy or blessed in verse 17, Matthew 16, 17. And Jesus said to him, happy are you, Simon Barjona, because flesh and blood did not reveal this to you, but my Father was in heaven. And before that, what did he reveal to him? You are the Christ, the Son of the living God. So verse 16, Peter has decided you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. In verse 17, Jesus says, that'll make you happy. You'll be happier if you have that conclusion that he is the Christ, the Son of the living God. So we could say faith in Christ or salvation brings happiness. Paul quoted Psalm 32 four times right there in Romans 4. And Psalm 32, blessed is the one whose transgression is forgiven and whose iniquity is covered. And Paul picks that up. And blessed are those who have forgiveness and whose sins is covered. Now, it's too bad I'm running out of time because I probably would spend more time on Galatians 4:15. And we'll make it. I think we'll make the point, though. Where is that blessedness you once had? It's Galatians 4:15. Where is that happiness you once had? It's in a context, if you used to believe in grace salvation, now you believe in work salvation and you're unhappy. Good theology really affects good psychology, and bad theology really affects bad psychology. People that are taught and believe bad theology have bad emotions. I don't know what percentage it is without making a list, but the people I've talked with talk out of killing themselves very often have bad theology. They go to a church where they're taught, you'll never know if you're really forgiven. You'll never know if you're really saved. Just work real, real hard, and at the end, we'll find out whether you were good enough. Very, very common. Then what affects, how are they in their emotions? Unhappy. Really unhappy. Really worried. I remember in making car parts in Michigan, the guy that was making camshafts pulled the line and ran over to me and said, have I lost my salvation? He's a Methodist, by the way. Have I lost my salvation? I'm worried about it. I can't make any more cars. So I go over in the lunchroom and the no more camshafts for a few minutes and tell him about we're saved by faith alone, not by works. People that believe you're saved by works are not happy. And that's Galatians 4:15. Where is that blessing you once had? Translate it, where's the happiness you once had, thinking you were saved by grace? You got mixed up with all these legalizers that say you're saved by how good you are, and you've lost your happiness. And then the last one there is knowing the Bible. So that was the most in the Old Testament, the most in the category of blessing or happiness was knowing God's truth. Plenty in the New Testament also. I'll just read it, the last one for us in Matthew 13:16. And you'll know it. Blessed are your eyes because they see. Blessed are your ears because they hear. Happiness, you know the truth. Unhappiness, not knowing the truth. We can categorize them into two things. If you follow the world, if we follow the world, we'll be unhappy. That's point number one. Just try to get them to approve you. Be unhappy. Number two, all real good feelings come from God. Will you come, please?